This is Rabbi Eric Levy, and I am pleased to bring to you the 10th and 11th, the two final Mishnahs of the 7th chapter of Bava Metzia for OU Shnayim Mishnah program. Meita Kedarka Hari Ze Ones. This Mishnah is also referring to a case where the animal dies under somebody's watch, and the watcher in this case is a Shomer Sachar, like it was before, or a renter, a Socher. And as they are not responsible for accidents, it continues to want to know what is considered an accident. So if it dies on its own, meita kedarka, hariza ones, so then you're not responsible for it. You swear that you didn't do anything to cause its death, and then you don't have to pay. But si gefa umeita, in ones. But if you abuse the animal and it dies, then you are responsible. The abuse could take various shapes. You left out in the cold on a cold day. You overheated on a warm day. But whatever it is, you are responsible. Now, it can't be talking about a case where you directly cause its death, like you put it you left it out in sub-30 weather and it froze to death, because in that case, the Mishnah wouldn't have to tell you that you're responsible, that it's not an accident. So here what happens is you treated it badly, and then it died of, let's say, a disease or indeterminate causes. In that case, the question is your abuse considered a contribution to the catching of the disease, the ability to not handle the disease, the death? And the short answer is yes, you are. It is not an onus. Al tala roshe tsukim v'nafla umeita, hari ze onus. So if the animal wandered off to the top of a cliff, and the Gemara says that would only work in a case where you couldn't have gotten there and saved it, and it fell off the cliff, that's an accident, that's an onus. Hela lo l'roshe tsukin v'nafla umeita ain onus. But if you took it up there and you led it up to the cliff and then it fell off, then that's on you. That's not an accident. And now the Mishnah will really start kind of a new topic. And the question is, what happens if you put a condition on the action that you're about to take, or on the proposal or the deal that you're making with somebody? Is that legally binding or not? So matzne shomer chinam leo patur mi shivua. A shomer chinam, an unpaid watchman, who is, if you remember, only responsible for irresponsible behavior, but for loss or theft, if the item is lost or theft, all he has to do is swear to God that he didn't do anything to it and he didn't steal it himself. So he can actually set a condition that says he doesn't want to take the swear. He just doesn't want to be responsible, period. Why might a person want to do that? Because it's probably a big deal to go in front of a court and swear in God's name that he didn't steal anything. He doesn't want to take that responsibility. So according to the Mishnah, he is allowed to essentially say, listen, I'll be a Shomer Chinam, but I'm not going to make any swear. If it's lost or stolen, I am simply not going to pay, and I'm not going to swear. And we'll discuss in a second why you could do that. But first, let's go to the other type of watchers and how that works for them as well. Va'ashoel li'o patur milashalim. So the shoel who's responsible for everything, the only thing he's not responsible for is when the animal dies as part of its natural work and natural use. So he could say, listen, I know I'm borrowing your stuff, and I know a shoel is usually responsible for everything, and I'm telling you that if something goes wrong, I'm not paying for that. And the Mishnah says, that's okay, you could do that. And even though the Mishnah doesn't say it, if he just says, listen, I'll borrow it, but if it dies on its own natural use, I'm not going to go through the process of swearing to God that I didn't do anything wrong, then that is fine too. And finally, the last two Shomrim, which have the same laws, and Nose Sachar, Shomer Sachar, Vasocher Liop Turim Mishua Umilashalim. So both the paid watchman, renter, same rules, they can both set a condition that they do not want to swear for what they would have to swear for, which is not for theft or loss, which they do have to pay for, but if the animal died, or if there was a breakage of the item, or if the government appropriated and took it away, they just don't. That not only do they not pay for it, but normally they would have to swear, and they just say, "Listen, we'll watch your item, or we'll rent your item on the condition that we don't have to take that swear," and that's perfectly fine. Now, what's a little bit unusual about this mission is there is a general principle that anyone who sets a condition on a deal, on a proposal, and the condition goes against the Torah, the condition is null and void. The phrase is matne al masha katuv b'Torah batel. So if you make a condition against what is written in the Torah, then the condition is void. And that really should apply here, because the person is essentially saying, I want to be a Shomer Chinam, I want to be a Shomer Sacha, I want to be a Shoel, but I'm not going to follow the conditions which is stated in the Torah. So the question is, why does this work? Why do these conditions work when you're doing something against what the Torah said? So there are two possibilities. One is that there is an argument, there is a dispute among the rabbis about whether the rule of Mata al Mashkatub Torah, whether if you make a condition against what says in the Torah it's void, works by financial issues. That is, if you have a financial case, so maybe you can go against what is written in the Torah. The other possibility, which seems more likely here, is that the person essentially is saying, I don't want to be a real shomer. That is, yeah, what I'm telling you is I know that a shomer from the Torah has to do these things, and therefore I don't want to be a real shomer. I'll be a new category that we'll make up right now, and it has the following rules, but it doesn't. Essentially, what I'm telling you is not that I'll be a shomer chinah with new rules, but I'll be a new type of shomer, and these are the rules. And since you're making up something completely new, that does not go against the Torah, and therefore the condition is effective. And now the final Mishnah continues. Mishnah Yudalef continues with the subject of making conditions, and states, "Kol amatan al mashkatu b'Torah tanau batel." So if you take a condition on what against what it says in the Torah, then your condition is null and void. So, but what's interesting is the proposal, the deal that you struck is good. But when you said the deal would only take effect, or the proposal would only take effect, if a following condition was set, and that condition goes against something that it said in the Torah, then the condition is perfectly good. The condition is bad, but the proposal is good. So let's take a case where a man says to a woman, so be married to me, and gives her the money, but it's on a condition that I don't have to give you the basic three provisions of the Torah, which are food, clothing, and ona. Then in that case, the condition is null and void, which leaves the marriage proposal intact, and in fact, they're married right away. Now, why the woman would be foolish enough to accept the token, the money from him, and agree to get married is a separate issue altogether. I would have thought a woman should go running when she hears a proposal with a condition like that. But nonetheless, should she take it, the condition is null and void, because it goes against the Torah law of providing certain things to your wife, and the proposal is still in effect. And now another condition which is null and void, and this is a more technical reason for it to be null and void, but nonetheless it is null and void. Kol tanai sheish maaseh b'tchilato tana'o batel. If you make a condition / proposal, and the proposal, the maaseh, is at the beginning of the words that you say, so then it's null and void. Now there is some dispute on what I'm saying, about what exactly a maaseh means. But we'll go with the general consensus, which is the maaseh is the proposal part of the condition plus the proposal. So here's an example. A man says to a woman, if you give me $5, I'll marry you with this ring. And then the condition is okay, which means if she takes the ring at that point, it's not a good marriage, because it was predicated, there was a condition that she'd have to give him $5 first. Again, I don't know why she would do such a thing, but she took it and it's fine. But if you said it the opposite way, which is, I'll marry you with this ring on the condition that you give me $5, then that becomes null and void. And it's a technicality based on the way that Reuben, the tribes of Reuben and Gad, made their proposal to Moshe to be able to elect the condition that they stipulated. Came first, and then they said, and now, you know, based on that condition being fulfilled, we'll take land on the east bank of the Jordan River. So based on that idea that you have to have the condition first and then the proposal, if it's the proposal first, then a condition, so the condition is null and void, but the proposal is still in effect. The Mishnah, however, makes another stipulation regarding the condition that you make, which is, even if you made the condition first, then the Tanah was Kayam. So the only case it works is where the condition is possible. So if you put the condition second, it's never going to work. It doesn't make a difference how viable it is. If you put the condition first, it should take effect. That is, you should have to fulfill the condition before the proposal takes effect. However, if the condition is impossible, then the proposal never takes effect. So if the guy says to the girl, on the condition that you grow wings and fly into the air, here's a ring and I'll marry you with it. And if she takes the ring, and again, who knows why she would do such a thing, but if she takes the ring, the condition is invalid, leaving the valid proposal in place. May they live happily ever after.